Hello, everybody, and welcome to UCB Longform Conversations, the podcast where we get pretty improv and comedy nerdy with performers and writers and other people from the UCB community. My co-host, John Frusciante, is gallivanting about with Torco doing shows for some college students. Who knows what he's doing, but he's not here this week, but we do have a guest, as always, a wonderful guest, Abra Tabak. Welcome, Abra.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Oh. Glad you could make it. looks pretty professional, right?
This looks really good.
Yeah, we got like real mics and a setup. That's because of our podcast master, Sypha Sounds.
Podcast intern.
That's right. Sypha's very concerned about the correct hierarchy here. He doesn't want to overstep his bounds, even though he is a professional DJ and radio superstar.
I wanted it to go squeaky, squeaky, like a record when it, yeah. You cued Sypha.
Well, he has got some sound effect. Like I say,
that's because her podcast has a lot of sound effects.
Yeah.
So she's used to that.
But I also think it's just like that. I just really want it.
You just like that sound.
And because Sypha has like the DJ headphones on right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it would fit. Anytime somebody's wearing DJ headphones, you expect a record scratch.
Yeah.
Late 80s Crush Groove style record scratch.
There you go.
Sypha, I've asked Sypha to be on the mic today. Since John's not here, we have an extra mic. So Sypha, I might throw it to you sometimes to get the student perspective on things, since you are a current avid and insane improv student.
Yes.
To kind of see, because Abra and I are going to be talking some old school improv history. So I'm curious what stuff is filtered down to you.
Okay.
We also have the Ian, the podcast intern off the mic podcast, watching us from afar. What's his title?
We had a discussion yesterday. He's the podcast intern's intern.
That's right. Intern's possessive intern.
Last week you referred to him as the two interns.
That's right, but you don't want to be equal with him because
he's the intern.
He's definitely under
intern.
What about the intern Peapod? Because it's podcast.
No, that makes sense.
Okay, no. Okay.
Yeah, you're adorable, and you're adding already more whimsy than I'm emotionally able to absorb. But so yes, if I might ask you some student questions. So Abra, let's get into it here.
Okay.
Well, usually, what we do here is we have some performers on, and we start kind of by going through your like improv / comedy story.
Okay.
So I don't know, where do you think that starts with you?
Okay, well, let's see.
I'm gonna interrupt you already.
What?
We should tell people like your general bio right now.
General bio of like
where you are, like teams and shows and stuff like that.
Great. Yeah. So I perform on Saturday nights at 10:30 with Grandma's Ashes.
That's
at
right.
UCB Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And then like every other Friday at The Beast, UCB East, with What I Did for Love.
Okay.
And then I host my own podcast called Make Yourself Comfy.
That's right.
With
Opportunity. Split Siders Network, right?
Yes. And it's on iTunes. You can subscribe for free.
Yep.
Let's spread the word, people.
Yeah. It's a great podcast.
You were
on it. Yeah. It's really
you
fun.
You were a joy.
Make Yourself Comfy.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this podcast, you definitely would like it. There's no doubt about it.
You were on and you had nipple clamps in a scene.
That's actually true. Yes.
And you were riding on a ladder in a bookstore.
That's fun, right? Yeah. I do that a disproportionate amount of improv scenes.
I got to hear the rough cut before we edit it, and you squeeing with your nipple clamps was so loud. Oh. It was amazing.
Sorry about that.
No, it was, I mean, that's what editing's for, but you were really yipping it up.
All right. So you do the Make Yourself Comfy podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Saturday nights, Grandma's Ashes, every other Friday, What I Do for Love.
Yes.
And then the jam, right? You host the
jam. Yes. The Wednesday night improv jam at UCB East at 11 o'clock, full of just lovely gems.
It is. We're going to talk about that later.
Okay, great.
Improv jam has changed the culture for the better here at UCB New York.
Oh.
So we're going to, I think definitely. But we'll get to that in a little bit. So now that we kind of know where you're at now, Abra, take us back.
Okay.
Back
to the beginning. Dreams. Okay. So I moved to New York right out of college. Mm-hmm. I got a job.
What year was this?
2005.
Okay.
I got a job at Ogilvy. It's an advertising agency here in New York.
Yes.
Used to be at Worldwide Plaza on 49th Street. They moved to right by the Hustler Club on 11th Avenue.
Classy.
I got out before then. So I worked there, and so I moved to New York. I lived in an apartment that was so small. I used to cook and put my pots on my bed.
Okay.
And I never did any theater or comedy or anything.
Really?
Nope.
You were at the University of Virginia.
I went to the University of Virginia. I was an RA my whole time there. I loved being an RA. And then I did the University Guide Service, which at UVA is like a, it's a big deal because UVA is a, it's a historical landmark because of its significance Jefferson. With Jefferson.
Yeah.
So we give historical tours and then we also did admissions tours. So I guess to me it had like a theatrical element to it because you had
given a tour you're performing. Of
exactly.
Sorts. If you're an RA, you're kind of in kind of like parent mode.
I think that mode is still a very much part of me. So I moved to New York and I had a friend who did improv at UVA. And when I moved to New York, she was in DC and she was like, hey, you should take a class at UCB. I bet you'd love it. And then I remember I was watching TV. I think I went and checked out the website and then I was watching TV and Ari Vakitis was on Best Week Ever.
Right.
And I was like,
Vakitis, teacher and performer here.
Yes. And I was like, what a special guy. Like, he just really was so sweet and energetic. Yeah. And then I saw he was teaching a class. Yeah. And I was like, this is a sign. I got to take this class.
Okay.
So I signed up and that was it. Like, I didn't stop taking classes from that point on. That was in 2006 by the time I was in New York for a little bit before I actually
started
taking classes.
Yeah.
And so I took the class. I loved it. I loved being in a class with Ari. His teaching style just really resonated with me because he was very constructive but also very positive.
Yeah.
And his energy is infectious too.
Yeah. Ari is definitely like a super giddy and enthusiastic and silly man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a super popular teacher in general, and especially for 101 students, people who come out of his 101 class are super jazzed.
Yeah.
You were one of those people.
Oh, God, I was so jazzed. I remember he went out after our last class with all of us to a bar, and I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. It was a huge deal.
Wow.
And because he hung out with us, and like we were all there. I remember I got real drunk. And I think I was screaming at a hot dog, and I fell down. But you know what? I think the thing was that Ari was really cool about it. So I think that made me, like, respect him and adore him even more.
As opposed to, like, scolding you or something?
Or just being like, oh, like,
not judgmental.
Yeah. I think whenever I get nervous, I usually drink too much. And so being with, like, my idol was, I was like, oh.
Yeah. And that was fun.
Super nice. Okay. But it was funny. I remember you standing by the jukebox and all of us were like waiting in a line to talk to him.
Yeah.
Like it was that moment where you're just like, you're hoping that your teacher is going to be like, hey, here's some things you should work on. You're like, now I got it or whatever. Yeah,
the magic words.
But he was so positive and great.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So you were hooked. Anything beyond the magnetism of Ari Vakitis? Like, was there just something about improv that you liked?
I think I'd always wanted to do theater. Like, mm-hmm. The closest I ever got was being in my synagogue's Purim play. and all the girls wanted to be Esther, and I wanted to be Haman.
Okay. Which, those are characters who are in a Purim play?
Story is so Esther is Queen Esther. Haman is bad. He's the bad guy in the story.
Okay.
So everyone wanted to be the beautiful princess or queen, and I wanted to be Esther because I really had a great idea for the character. And so my rabbi was really cool, and he was like, all right, I mean, if you want to be. So I like took, you know, you can burn the end of a cork and it makes it ashy. So I made a big black beard, and then I just like ran around my synagogue like yelling.
Yeah.
And I was like,
how old were you at this time?
probably like 13. Like, oh God, I wish I was like, I was only 5, but I wasn't.
No, you were.
I was pretty old. And I think that was as close as I got. And then I also did My Fair Lady in high school, and I was in the ensemble, so I got to wear a cool outfit. Never really learned the lyrics to the song,
right.
So I just made like mouth gestures. I legitimately don't think I ever learned any of it, but I would just like really mouth it up.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's all you need.
Yeah, that's what you. That's
I had a huge hat on. It was pretty great. But anyway, so those are my two experiences. I think I was
you were primed to like theater type stuff, so this improv class really hit with you.
Yes.
Okay.
I think the thing was I've always been very afraid of doing like being like I want to be an actor or an actress because I think I've always been someone who's like I should have a steady job and I need to be a businesswoman.
Right.
So that's what my intentions were coming to New York. I was like I'm going to be an ad agency lady.
Right.
But then when I took that class I was like, "Ugh, this is like
This is it.
This hit me like right in my gut where it all lived. And I think the fact that Ari, I think, was very encouraging of me. Like, I think if I hadn't had that, like, I think I don't very much trust myself in my instincts of like, hey, I'm.
This is interesting because I'm thinking a lot about like what makes the school, because I'm in charge of the school.
Yes.
Barbara, as you know, hospitable.
Yes.
Or not. And I'm actually thinking a lot about. What makes the school, I don't want to, I'm looking for terms for this. Maybe you can help me.
Okay.
I want to make the school hospitable, but not coddling.
Yes.
Like I need it to be honest about what's good or bad, but I don't want it to be mean.
Yep. I totally know what you're saying.
Like a mean note, I mean a harsh note is okay, but like some of the culture is too exclusive or alienating.
I agree.
Unnecessarily alienating. Thinking about Syph and I talked about it in an interview.
Yeah.
Directly.
Well, I think that's the thing. And I actually, can I say that I've read my feedback forms?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Say whatever.
I've read my feedback forms from my students.
Because you're a teacher and they fill out evaluations.
Right.
And teachers are allowed to read those feedback forms.
And I've read them. I read them. I was so nervous. I was sweating everywhere because I was like, something's going to be in here. Like, she's so dumb or like something. And I was gonna be like, I have to stop. But the one of the notes I got was like, she says great about everything. And I was like, oh, okay. And that was like my probably first round of teaching, like a class. And I was like, okay, this is good to hear. So I've gotten really into giving personal notes because I think that's the best way for me to provide constructive feedback, but also not be like a jerk.
Yeah.
Like be like, hey.
Because the individual tension makes it feel special even if it's something harsh.
Yeah. And that's how I am. Like I mean, I'm probably, I don't know if you call yourself a masochist, but like I like a tough note. Like I like someone being like, look, you keep doing this. You better cut that crap out.
Yeah.
But I don't do, I mean, I have said stuff like, hey man, you're bullying people on stage. Or, I can tell you're judging people's moves on stage.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to share what I think you're doing great. You know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting because you're bringing up Vukitas was encouraging and how that made a big impact on you.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's
I mean, he's taught more 101s than he and Betsy have taught more 101s than anybody probably, I mean, almost definitely at UCB New York. So not to belittle the experience, but you're just one of thousands of students. But he was able to, his default mode is encouraging enough that it hit.
Yeah. And I think in a class where like you can tell like, I think he just gave me notes that made me feel really good. You know, like he was just really great about being super supportive and really encouraging when I did something well, to the point that I was like, I left that class being like, I know I don't suck at this.
Yeah.
I know I'm not. There's something that Ari saw in me that is good enough that I should keep. And I like it. So I'm going to keep going. If I had any inkling that Ari was like, you are not doing well at this, I would have stopped.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like that. Like I need to hear that. I need outside perspective because I don't really trust my own gut about that stuff.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go from there.
Okay.
When did you start realizing you might be performing and doing it more often? Like when did you go from just being a student to like doing it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I took your 201 class.
That's right. I was your 201 teacher.
And after 201, so that was when we started to form what eventually became Thank You Robot, that came through taking classes together. So it was like originally, now the group.
So Thank You Robot was an indie group. An indie group that you were in for a long time. Long mainstays of the indie improv scene in New York.
Yeah. I guess I was in Thank You Robot for like 3 years, maybe more, four.
Okay.
But yeah, we started, so we started as a much bigger group. We were super serious about it to the point that we were like, okay, if you can't make a rehearsal every week, you're out. Like this is the way this group's going to operate. Like,
wow.
Because there were people who were like, I think we're like 15 people strong, you know? And so I think you have to get to that point where you're like, look, we're going
to
really
go down to the people who are
so that I think other people, you know, and so we had that process where we kind of, and I think it was a painful process. Like there were some people who kept missing and we asked them to leave the group and it was not a positive experience, but we were all so into it.
Wow.
And not in a jerky way, but we were like, look, guys, we want to be
awesome.
Yeah, we want to be really good. And we were very fortunate. Dominic Durkis was our coach and coached us like consistently for like 2 years.
Wow.
Like he was amazing.
Yeah.
He came to our shows. Like God bless Dominic.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the reason that group became
good.
Good.
Yeah.
Because he was so consistently there and he was invested in us and we all just felt so fortunate. And I think we all just admired him so much as a performer that it was like, right. Holy crap. Yeah. I can't believe this guy's coaching us.
Yeah.
And he just was the best. And so we were performing together. And we performed anywhere and everywhere we could. We did.
What was the early lineup then? I know it went through a bunch of changes at first, but what was like an early thing that it settled into?
It settled into it was like Casey Savage,
yes,
Larry Levine, mm-hmm. Matt Little, Seth Lind, Chris Scott, John Robert Wilson, and Jeremy Bent.
Okay.
I hope I didn't forget anybody.
Usually when we name the members of a group, we leave somebody out and then we hear about it and I'll have to correct
it. I'm apologizing in advance.
It almost always happens.
There were people before that. So those people, I appreciate you and I really treasure your presence. Those were...
You're listing a lineup that was pretty stable at some point.
Yeah, that was, you know, the group that like when we eventually started hosting our Under St. Mark show. Like that was... but before we got there, I mean, we performed everywhere. We performed one time in a Mexican restaurant in Midtown East where they cleared the tables out in the middle of the restaurant. So we were surrounded by tables. Like there wasn't even a back wall. And we did improv for people who did not want to have improv. And we
That's called an ambush show, I think. That's what stand-ups call an ambush show. It's like if you just get the owner puts you up in front of people who are not expecting a show.
It was... insane. Mm-hmm. And I think we did like a 30-minute set, like something so bad where it's like, because we just wanted to perform so bad. I mean, it was so, all the tables were so tight. I could have reached over and grabbed a chip. Like it was bad. I mean, it was ridiculous. But then we were like, yeah. And we, you know, like we were just like, we did another show. And then, anytime we could get anything.
What level were you taking at classes at this time?
Probably. Like
by the time Thank You Robot is at that level.
Like 401.
Gethard, right? Didn't you have Gethard?
Yeah, I had Gethard. I had Gethard for 301 and 401. Mm-hmm. I tried to take him for 501, and he told me I'm not allowed because he was like, I don't have anything else to tell you.
I remember that. That's when he was teaching all the time.
He was teaching all the time, and I adored and adore Chris Gethard for being so supportive of me. And I think I just felt always...
Your teachers were Ari Vukitas, Will Hines, and Chris Gethard. That's who your undergrad improv teachers
Chris
were.
Chris Gethard. And then... So then I left Gethard's... I didn't stay... I never went to that class. He gave me the boot. And I took Anthony King's class.
Wow.
Who was... And, oh, no. And I took Michael Delaney's class. Then Anthony King's class.
All the people in charge of stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah.
And then I eventually took... I also took a workshop with Christina Gaussis. I took... musical improv with Eliza Skinner, I think, and then I ended up taking a 600 with Gethard. So I kind of
Raw Herald one.
Yeah, that was awesome.
We should talk about that class.
Okay,
wasn't Dan Gurwitch in that class?
Yeah.
And, let's just skip ahead and talk about the Raw Herald. So this is Gethard is a great improv teacher.
So great.
But there was a time when he taught a ton, and I think it was at that time he was doing like a ton of 301s and 401s.
Yeah.
He was coaching everybody. He was, and I think he was running the school. I think he was like Joey improv teacher as much as he would ever be.
He was great.
And the Raw Herald class, the performance class that he taught, was kind of like the first real Gethard-y
totally
project class from what I remember.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
So
we'll talk about that. Raw Herald, what was
I mean, the group was so, we were all so into it, so into being in class with Gethard. It was this show where, like, I mean, literally it was like there was no parameters. We just followed things that were fun. And
the goal of the class was to do a Herald, but without the Herald structure.
Exactly.
But some kind of long form that, like, fulfilled the spirit of a Herald, right?
Totally.
Like things coming back.
Yeah.
And building overall, right? Am I remembering this right? But that's hard to do when there's no structure. Like,
totally.
How do you decide to? It must be weird because if you get close to the structure, you must feel like you're doing it wrong, and you try to do something different just to do something different, maybe, or like.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, a class like that, I think because I'm, I think it was like that for me was like the first time I figured out how weird I am. Like, I think, and gathered in general, like I felt like I could be a little bit weirder. I think when I started out doing improv, I think I tended to just play a lot of low status characters. I still love playing a real beat on character, yeah. But I think that class for sure pushed me towards like bigger, weirder characters, which I think I equally love.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that, but it was hard to like, yeah, I mean, there were moments where you're like, oh God, I just want a beat or something to like, be like, I know what's going on, but
yeah.
But when you have Chris Gethard like screaming, laughing, like yeah. you feel like you can do anything. Yeah.
And,
you know?
And people in that class were like filled with improv fire from what I remember.
We were the thing.
I remember walking through the back of the theater when that show was going on and everyone's eyes were wide open like you were on drugs. Like yeah. Everyone had taken like a bottle of amphetamines before
totally.
The start of the show. Hmm.
The big thing about it was we called ourselves the Raw Herald.
Yeah.
And I volunteered to get a drink promotion at Rawhide, the bar. The gay bar down in Chelsea. And everyone's like, okay. So I was like, I literally would call Rawhide, email with the manager. I became very close with the manager of Rawhide. I went to Rawhide in the middle of the day, like bright sunny lights, opened that leather curtain, yeah. like sat down with him to talk. We got drink specials, and then so I like did all this planning. And then the night of the show, I was like, guys, we have to go to Rawhide. And everyone was like, no, I don't want to go.
Right.
And I was like, you guys, please, somebody's got, we got to go to Rawhide. And everyone's like, no, we're going to McManus. And I was like, why?
Why did you expect a bunch of emotionally repressed male improvisers to be ready to go to a gay bar together after their show? Why did you think that was going to work?
Well, I think the other thing was that
was anybody in the class gay?
I don't know.
I think you were asking a lot.
Well, I think the thing was we were all going to go together, and then Gethard was super into the idea too, yeah, and so I was like, this is great. And then, you know, it fell
nobody
through.
Yeah.
I think I wrote an email to the manager apologizing
did
afterwards.
He, care?
He didn't care. Yeah. I think he was, you know, he was really friendly. I was mostly excited to be like, look, you know, like being in New York and like just making friends with like a manager of a bar. I was like, that's like I was sitting on the stool in the middle of the day. I think he like got me a soda and I was like, this is big. But in the end.
Let's talk a little bit more about Thank You, Robot.
Okay.
And just sort of the indie scene in general.
Yes.
Because I feel like when this does become blurry to me, so I might be a little bit wrong, but like there was a time when there wasn't much of an indie improv scene.
Right.
And, or it would just be like a show now and then. I think there was Variety Underground was a show, Parkside Lounge, which
yep.
was really a lot of stand-ups, but they would have improv sometimes. School Night. There'd be like a few shows that would let non-UCB groups perform, but
yeah.
there weren't anything regular. And then there was, I get these mixed up, but it was like Kid Durbin, Big Tobacco, you guys, Thank You Robot, and
uh-huh.
a couple of the groups just started like pioneering having
yeah.
shows all the time outside of the theater. I also feel like Rogue Elephant was a pioneer in
yes,
that. Is that. Do you
absolutely.
Remember that?
Yeah, for sure.
Rogue Elephant was older than you guys. Like they'd been together
yep.
much longer, but they started doing shows at Under St. Mark's, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you help me remember this? Or
yeah,
this
it was
down?
Rogue Elephant was at Under St. Mark's for sure.
Fridays.
And then I don't know if it was Mailer Demon or Fwand hosted at Under St. Mark's.
Fwand.
On Saturdays.
Oh, okay.
I believe it was Saturday. No, I guess maybe Rogue stopped.
The alternated weeks, maybe?
I think that's what it was. It was Rogue,
every
and then...
Every other Friday was Rogue, and every other Friday was Fwand and
yes.
somebody.
And then, so before, and then during that time, after, well, they all started it for sure. Rogue and Fwand were...
And for the, by that happening meant that, like, Rogue would have some new team
exactly.
be the opening team, which meant that all of a sudden there's a spot every Friday.
Yeah.
So these teams started...
Huge deal to get asked.
Yeah.
Super exciting.
It also cemented the teams. Like, they know they could look forward to that
totally.
Show, so they stay together.
Yeah.
That happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we started host Thank You Robot started hosting a show. We hosted a show at Parkside Lounge.
Oh, okay.
You know, after they've all been doing everything at Under St. Mark's.
Right.
So it was like our little shady weird spot. Because that bar is weird.
That bar's not good for improv.
No. I mean, the positive is it has like a glitter curtain in the background. But other than that, and they make a really great ginger ale with bitters.
Okay.
That's
Didn't know that.
Delicious. Good. But we, yeah. So, I mean, getting asked, the thing was with the Rogue and Fwan shows were at that time, though, there were so many indie groups buzzing about, mm-hmm. like, that it took a while to get asked back. Like it was like a yearly thing, I think.
Oh, really? Was that many?
I mean, I don't know, or maybe like twice a year or something. Right. But I mean, when you got your spot, it was like, oh my God, we're doing the show. It's a big deal. We're so excited. Cause that was like,
can you remember any of the indie teams from that time?
Oh gosh. No,
I'm gonna try to name some. See if you can make sure. Okay. LaserCat one of them or something like that? How about a Bloody might've been one.
Yep. Oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I can't remember the group. It's like,
And was Big Tobacco and Kid Durbin at that time, or was it a different time? Was it a little
Big
later?
Big Tobacco was, I thought, a little bit earlier. That was like Lydia and all of them were on that
right.
group.
Brandon Gardner and Phil
Chorba. Oh my
gosh,
I'm so embarrassed. I can't remember this group. It was like, Ben Whitehouse, Amy Whitehouse.
Oh, LD and the Scientist?
Yes. That was another big group.
Curtis Rutherford was on.
Curtis Rutherford, yes. Yeah. Those, I mean,
Bad Data was around at that time.
Yep. Who else? Beep, beep, beep. I'm going to think more, but the other big places to perform were.
Yeah.
Because LD and the Scientist, is that who it was? No, it wasn't. It's this other group that I'm being a real bonehead and I can't remember. What was a theater that used to be on like 11th Street? It was a little tiny theater.
Under the Under Kleptomania place or the Gene Frankel Theater?
No.
Oh, that's Bond Street.
It was like a bar and then had a little theater in the back and then it closed. I'm going to be real mad at the end of this when I remember
11th everything. Street in the East Village?
Yeah, it was like right there by Venero's, the little bakery.
Oh, Rafifi?
Yeah, we did shows at Rafifi too.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the Red Room was another one.
Right.
But yeah.
East 4th Street, Red Room, yeah, above the KGB bar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Near a really great Italian restaurant called Cucina di Pesci. Plug. But yeah, Undersea Mars was like the big, I think, big, happy, that theater. I don't know. It's just a real joyful place to me because
it works.
So
the audience is
bugs.
Above the stage and it makes us feel nice and easy. It does. The shows feel easy there.
Exactly. And so it was a big deal to get to perform with those groups. And so eventually Fwand was going to stop hosting and we asked to have that spot. And so we got it. And so that became our baby. Like every single week we did it. And oh man, we took it real seriously. And I think, it was great. I think, you know, it's interesting talking about being an RA is that I think, people who've been on a team with me would probably attest to this, that sometimes I bring my motherly RA self to that ball game.
I've certainly seen it in scenes.
Oops. I just mean I'm a big like planner. Like I'm going to be the one who sends an email that unfortunately has bullet points in it about like what we need to do. And I think I was big into like organizing. And I think that, you know, that's not supposed to be like a toot toot my own horn thing, but I think because our group was so invested to rehearse every week, and then I was like, I don't mind planning. Thank You Robot just became this group that we rehearsed every week, like for years.
Yeah, right.
And I think that was, I think that was pretty unique. I don't know if I'm lying about that. I think other groups were more casual.
There was definitely like sort of two types of groups, like some that would just come out of a class and they would rehearse for a while and when they could, but then it would fade pretty quickly. Fat Penguin was another group that was very devoted.
Yes, absolutely.
Big Tobacco was really devoted for a while, I think. This is secondhand. I wasn't on these groups.
No, I think you're totally right.
I remember getting the sense that some of these groups arrived real focused.
Yes,
treating themselves
absolutely.
As like they were a performance team at a theater.
Yeah, no, that's meant to be like we were really special. But I just remember that we were here at, or wherever rehearsing every single week with Dominic too. So it was
consistent coaching.
It was consistent coaching. It just really, I think everything, our stars aligned very well for that group to make it a group that stayed together. And really, I think, you know, got better together.
What do you remember, like, feeling Well, let's talk about breakthroughs. Let's talk about improv breakthroughs.
Yeah.
Maybe this might be redundant because it sounds like a couple of these Gethard classes might have been breakthrough times.
Yeah.
But like, what are things you remember just like feeling better all of a sudden, or a time when you remember getting better or more confident or something?
Yeah.
Or is that like a weird question to
throw
out?
No, it's not.
Even like a particular note or something? I always like stories like this.
It's hard to say. I mean, it all really does. Gethard for me was that person who really kind of made me feel stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Because he liked the scenes I was in, and I admired him so much that made me feel good to have him laugh.
How about Thank You Robot breakthrough? Maybe like was it just like doing that show, taking over for Rogue Elephant? Did you feel like that kind of cemented, like upped your status in the community more? Or did you feel like it was more like, oh, now people know how good we are? Or are you guys already known or something like that?
No, I mean, I think, I don't know if there, I don't really know if I had a breakthrough moment in that. I just really was like so invested in that show.
Yeah.
And I was so stoked that our shows were really successful. Like we had good turnouts. Not always. I mean, we definitely had some nights where we're like, oh man. but yeah. And then I think that was a group where like, we really did some weird stuff together, weird physical stuff. We definitely lifted Chris Scott like a million times.
Right.
And
some people don't like being lifted. Being lifted
I do not like to be lifted.
Yeah, Morgan Jarrett was telling me how she hates it when people.
I don't like to be lifted. I will resist. I'll find a way to like get out of that situation. although I did let myself recently get picked up by Dan Black, but I was on his back, so that's like a little different. that was awesome though. Because I jumped on his back like a horse. Like he was in motion and I jumped on his back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was the most thrilling thing I've ever experienced. Anyway. So, yeah, I think there was just moments where I just realized performing with them that I wasn't thinking in those with them at a certain point. I remember just eventually just getting to a place where I was like, man, I'm just really having fun and doing weird stuff up here. I'm not thinking about game. I'm thinking about weird, you know, and it was just like we all really liked each other and supported each other. And I think just getting in that place where we recognized how special it was in that regard, like we just knew each other so well.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I don't know if there was a particular moment, but I just remember performing with them just feeling very free and not scared.
Yeah.
And not thinking about it.
Wow.
Then you throw me in Herald auditions, and I was just shitting everywhere.
Is that
so,
right?
Oh yes, I did terrible in my Herald.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, I looked at Geth. I was just telling my students this. I walked in, I made eye contact with Gethard, and then I don't think I stopped staring at Gethard the entire time. I was frozen, and afterwards, I think all I worried about was I let Gethard down. I really let Gethard down. I didn't care about me making it. I was just so embarrassed. I emailed him right away, and I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry I blew it in there. And he was like, yeah, you really froze up. I don't know what happened.
Wow.
But that was my number one concern. I was like, I really let Gethard down.
Wow. That's amazing.
Well.
When did you get put on Herald Night?
See, I squeaked in Herald Night because Maggie left Bastion for L.A.
Maggie Carey, yeah.
Maggie Carey left. So I didn't make it through an audition. I made it through Bastion picking me to join.
Yeah.
So God bless you, Bastion, because I never would have made Herald Night through an audition because I'm terrible at auditioning and I get really scared.
Yeah.
So
I never had to do it.
You didn't either?
No, because there was no auditions when I got put on.
You're like, hey, I want to be on a team.
Yeah, you just had to ask. So Bastion was your first team.
Bastion was my very first team.
You'd already been around a while. Like that, I think you were one of the people that a lot of people were like, why isn't she on a team already? I feel like you were one of those people.
Oh, well, I auditioned more than once. And I think that was the thing. People were very encouraging and being like, I bet you'll make a team. And and then I was like, no, I didn't make it. So I got to a place where I was just like, you know what? I love playing with Thank You Robot. I'm happy as a clam doing my thing. And And then I was performing with MAD. And
so let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What's MAD?
MAD was Mackenzie, Aubrey, and Darcy. Mm-hmm. We were three ladies who Darcy and I were friends through the Raw Herald.
Okay.
Mackenzie and Darcy were friends from Christina Gauss's all-female class. Mm-hmm. And through that, I think Gauss had talked to Darcy and Mackenzie about, like, oh, I want to work with you gals. And then Darcy was like, hey, Aubra, I bet you like Mackenzie. And so then it just kind of came together.
Okay.
I actually remember I met Mackenzie for the first time at the Starbucks beneath Ogilvy because I quit that day. And I had, like, all my crap. And we had coffee together. So we did a show. Matthew McConaughey blog. What was it? The title? Matthew McConaughey Improv. I'm messing it up. Where we would take from Matthew McConaughey's blog, like his entries, we'd cut up strips and then draw a name or draw a piece of, because it's fascinating what he writes.
Yeah.
And then we'd improvise off of it.
He's not like a super intellectual dude.
No.
I recall. Yeah.
Just keep living is his mantra. And so we did a show. We rehearsed with Christina. We did a spank. And I think we were just kind of – we did not get a show because I think mostly it was like, hey, we're going to pull this strip of paper, but then we're just going to do whatever we want. So, yeah. Like, it didn't really stick to a concept very well. But through that, we were doing MAD, and then the men of Sidecar
– yes.
Justin Tyler, Matt Fisher,
Alden Ford,
they were a sketch group at the time, and we all became friends.
Justin Tyler was the first ever guest on this podcast.
Well,
wait, or was it Nick?
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy, I forgot now.
Eeps.
No, I think it was Justin. Justin Tyler was
okay.
The first one, yeah.
So we all became friends, and then through that, we started hosting Gentrify at the Brooklyn Lyceum in Brooklyn, and that was a show that we did every single week in the Lyceum, which is maybe the largest, coldest space in New York.
Yeah, what was it originally? Like, was it like a...
It was a bathhouse.
Okay. This big brick. Now it looks like an old brick cathedral, basically.
Yeah.
This big cavernous inside.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It's great. And so we would host shows where we would have improv, sketch, music, whatever. We ran a little bar, and then I was DJ PP on the tunes. Cypha. I will toot my own horn. I know how to make people dance. I pick really good dance jams.
Oh, yeah?
So it is.
Cypha, isn't that your thing? You can make people dance, isn't that right?
Yeah. You're an expert at that.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
But she is too.
I bet Cypha. I know Cypha would win. But, I mean, I really enjoyed doing that. Like, I used to spend so much time getting the playlist ready for Gentrify. I mean, it was, like, very important to me. And I would always be back there, and I would pretend to, like, scratch records.
Yeah.
Nothing like that was happening. It was an iPod. But we would have huge dance parties. I mean, because that space is insane.
Yeah.
So it was really fun. So we hosted that show for a while. And around that time... God, I'm mixing up all my dates, but I made Bastion,
mm-hmm.
and then I was doing both. I was doing Bastion, Thank You Robot, and MAD.
Yeah.
And because Thank You Robot, MAD, and Gentrify were the same night,
yeah.
I was missing a lot of Thank You Robot shows, so eventually I was like, I think I have to leave.
Yeah.
So I left the group.
It's been weird.
It was weird. But you know, it was a great group. It was a great experience. But I think it was just time to try.
Have you performed with them since then?
I haven't.
Oh, that's too bad. There should be a reunion show.
A reunion that would be nice. Because
they still do shows. Thank You Robot is still happening.
I don't know.
Definitely, they recently.
No,
did,
I'm
like,
saying I don't know about like would they want me?
Yeah, I bet you we can make it happen.
Okay.
Yeah. So you stepped away from Thank You Robot, so now you're doing Gentrify
and Bastion. I was Bastion. Yep. Yeah. So I mean, I was so lucky to be on Bastion. I mean, some of the meanest people that used to be. Just kidding.
Yeah.
It's the polar opposite. It was like literally entering a team with the nicest.
Yeah. Who was on it? Was Brian Baird and Gardner was not on it anymore, right?
Yes, he was. Gardner was still there. It was original Bastion, just minus Maggie.
So that's, okay, I'm going to be able to get on.
You're
going to
do it. Here we go.
Brian Barrett, Brandon Gardner, Lydia Hensler, John Murray. Abrete back. Wait, I lost track where I was. Oh, Adam Frucci. So wait, Adam, Brian, and Brandon, the three tall. So mm-hmm. John. Oh, Molly Lloyd. And
Lydia.
Did I say Lydia Hensler? Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry.
And Oscar Magallanes.
Right, okay. Oscar was going to be the one I forgot. And I know Oscar, I'm sorry.
He's just so attractive. You block him out. Because everyone's just like, I can't handle his tall, hunky beauty.
That's right. He's one of the tall, thin ones. I should have remembered. Bastion was like the tallest, thinnest team when it was Maggie and all those people.
Yeah, and then I entered and I was like, rah, rah. I think that was like the first thing. They were like, you're throwing off her average hard because I came on and I'm 5'3¾".
And Maggie Carey is like 6'5".
Wonderful.
Yeah, 6 foot wonderful. That's right.
Yep, I made it and we went for the very first meal. They like the day I found out, which I remember, I was home working from home and Anthony called me. And I was just running around my apartment. I had upgraded to a slightly bigger apartment on the Upper East Side, but equally pretty small. Mm-hmm. And I was just running back and forth in my apartment screaming, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I knew Molly and Brian, so they both called me. And then they planned very quickly a meal. I think not everybody could make it. But we went to that Uncle Nick's Greek restaurant over here. And so I remember we got like some heaping hot cheese thing and I was just like basking in happiness. I was just so happy. And then, you know, I didn't know John Murray at that time.
Right.
And then you meet him and you're like, oh, you are the most warm,
wonderful
human being.
He's suspiciously nice.
I mean,
someday it'll come out that he's like a spy for another country or
maybe,
something.
Maybe, but God, he was just everyone. And then Brian, I mean, everybody was so nice and welcoming. And then I did my first show with them, and I remember that moment, like, oh my God, it was just so great.
Cool. Bastion was like on Herald Night forever. But Sypha, now this is where I want to know your perspective on things. You were not around when Bastion was performing, right? That was probably sometime before
you. No, I saw a Bastion reunion show at DCM.
Yeah, that's probably right, yeah.
Yeah, so that was really cool, and I was like, oh, a lot of Grandma's Ashes came from there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Grandma's Ashes is sort of like a descendant of Bastion, I would say.
Yeah.
And
was Tenoy in Bastion?
Yeah.
He was, right?
At one point, Tenoy,
maybe to replace Gardner, maybe? Gardner got moved to Reuben Williams.
It was Tenoy, and then Brian Fossivant also joined.
Right.
Oh, man, I love Brian Foss.
Was that when Barrett left, or I?
Yes, Brian Barrett moved. Left.
Yeah, and how about these indie teams? You've never seen or heard of these indies, like Thank You Robot, you don't know. Like
I've heard the name.
Bad Data.
Yeah, I've heard some of the names, mostly on this podcast.
Yes.
This is before my time, but I'm so young here.
I hear you. Well, that's why it's interesting for me to know your perspective
what
on stuff.
Around what year was this, you think?
See, Bastion started Bastion like 2007 or earlier. I think that's right. I think they started like 2007, 2008. And then they went for a while. I think, when did you guys end? 2010?
Yeah. I mean, it was, the team was together for over 3 years. I guess it would be like 2010-ish. Yeah, I think
there was some time when Bastion had done more Heralds and Herald Night than anybody else at UCB New York history. Because they were good, so you guys were anchoring a lot and around for a long time.
Yeah.
I think that was true. Cypher, do you have a team, right? Bodega Cats, is that a performance group?
Yeah. That's like I'm very jealous of what you were saying about like Thank You Robot, like how you practice every week and like on point. Like, I can't.
Plus, it's gonna be hard to get to because like how do you demand of your friend? You meet in class, your friends, there's like this big happy feeling, you want to be in a group together, you do that, but then some people just can't be there as much for whatever, either they're not into it as much or maybe they're into it but like they just have a weird work schedule or something.
I hope I'm not talking bad about anybody, but everybody says they're into it in the beginning, so you get this euphoric feeling and then people start fading out and you're like, how do you get mad? They have an excuse. Who am I to say,
you know? I would have trouble being like that kind of disciplinarian, but you guys had an iron fist.
We had a really tough two-person removal. Like, we said something, I think, eventually at one point where it was like, if you start missing Like three rehearsals in a row.
From the beginning, you said that?
No, it was like as we were getting more and more serious. And yeah. And so it was like what, someone did that, and then there's someone who, like, it was just hard. But we were like, if that's what we said, that's – so I remember a conversation where I eventually met with the person, and they were furious.
Yeah.
And it was really bad. And, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, it's hard because I don't think improv should be something where everyone's so serious about it and stuff. But when you're at, I mean, in the end, that helped our team, is that we were all people who are like, it's a big deal if you're going to miss. Like you're out of town or you're like barfing, not like, oh, I want to go to brunch, you know, which I mean, and we got to that place. I also think. I think I'm a little bit of a disciplinarian. I think I tend to be the person to speak up about that stuff.
Okay.
And I think Thinky Robot would probably agree that, like, at times I was probably too serious.
I see. It's surprising because you're so silly on stage.
I think I changed a lot. I think I loosened up. But, like, I am – and I'm still that way. Like, I really am big on, like – I think there was just a period of time where people were showing up late.
Yeah.
And I would be in rehearsal so angry. And then I would send an email like, this is disrespectful to Dominic. We look bad. Like,
wow.
This is really upsetting. And, you know, and I'm sure people were like, oh, shut up, man. Like, relax. But, like, that's a little bit of my personality. And it's probably a problem that I should work on.
I didn't mean to say that. I'm just surprised. I just sometimes you don't, it's hard to tell with some stage persona what they would be like, I think.
But I think that is a little bit of I'm very conscious of what other people think, and so I never wanted to be perceived as a group of people who are in any way disrespectful, especially to old, like, established performers. Like to show up late to a rehearsal, I mean, I it just made me want to, like, vomit.
How about missing shows? Were you strict about that? People probably don't miss shows as much.
We didn't. I think if we didn't miss a show, we were all like, I'm going to try to get on a plane or whatever. Like, we all were so dedicated. And that group of people, I mean, we all eventually got to a place where we really were like, no one missed rehearsal unless it was something big happening. We just really wanted.
You're out of town or whatever.
Yeah. And that's that. And I think that is literally why that group is. We ended up having so much success together because we really were that committed. And we really wanted to get better. I think that helps. I think that really makes a big difference for an indie team.
How about, do you have advice? Did you guys ever, how'd you deal with noting? How did you talk about what you wanted to do as a team? How did you arrive at group decisions? Because I feel like it's tough for people to compromise so that you can all be on the same page, but kind of get what you want. How much do you compromise for it's too much? Like, I've heard. People have asked me that question, and I don't even really know what to tell them. Like,
I mean, I think, again, we were really lucky because of Dominic, because he worked with us for so long. I mean, literally years. I mean, I don't know how he was that wonderful, but he was. So he also was very proactive in helping us see things to do. And then we all adored him so much that Dominic was like, hey, why don't you guys try an organic album? We're like, okay, cool, let's do it. Like, you know, and then he would work with us and help us get better. And then I think we really were, because we had a, you know, a friendship with him, you know, we would come back and say after a show, like, you know, we had a little bit of a hard time with this kind of stuff, and this was really fun. And, but I know that's hard because now there's just so many indie groups. To get a consistent coach is, like, impossible.
Yeah.
And I totally recognize, like, we were really lucky. I think because we were at a time before indie teams were so
prevalent.
Many that, you know, we could have a coach who came to our shows and, like, coached us every weekend. I mean, we were really lucky. So I think in terms of, we were really good in that we didn't note each other because we had somebody who literally came to our shows too.
Yeah.
And took that weight off of us. So that's not helpful. Find a coach who's
who'll show up all the time and who's and everybody respects.
We really were fortunate.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
So where are we now in the Abra story? You're on Bastion.
I'm on Bastion.
That becomes Grandma's Ashes, right?
Yeah. So Bastion gets dispersed, and we become Grandma's Ashes. And so Grandma's Ashes is a Herald team. We're bebopping around.
Right.
Yeah, and Grandma's Ashes.
Phil Jackson was on Grandma's Ashes for like a week and a half.
Literally like a weekend. I just saw Phil doing the Caroline show that Sypha hosted, and something happened. We were talking about
it. He had like one rehearsal, one show, and then it was...
Yeah, we took a picture. We hung out on his roof. He had a great apartment with a rooftop, and then I think like 2 days later, it was like, oh, he's not on the team. But he was wonderful. But you know, I mean, so Grandma's Ashes was like, we were really plugging along. But then we had changes in our team, with people moving and switching to different teams. And I think everything really took off when Jordan Klepper started coaching us. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of the greatest people ever. Okay. I just really have amazing things to say about Jordan, and probably like just one of the greatest coaches. I don't know how he does it. Sometimes I try to do his exercises and I'm like, this stinks. I can't do this. It's Jordan.
Yeah.
He also has this great ability to like get up out of his seat and be enthusiastic, but not weird. Every time I get out of my chair, I start flapping my arms and I'm very bizarre.
Yeah. It sounds like from how you're describing it.
Yeah. I mean, and so actually the point that I was talking to Brian Voss and I was like, I'm so tired after I'm teaching. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm standing the whole time. And he's like, why are you getting out of your chair? And I was like, he's like, you don't need to be on performing, like sit down. I'm like, I just want everyone to be energized. And he was like, you need to sit in your chair. So for a while I would be like, you are not allowed to get out of your chair. But anyways,
so Jordan was a big part
Jordan, of it. Yeah, man. I mean, Jordan definitely did really gel that our team. I mean, he just really worked with us. Like, it just was a perfect magical match. And it literally was, Jordan was coaching us and we started to like just find our groove and find our special Grandma's Ashes self. It's just a team that like we all love it. We like all love each other. We like being around each other. We also have a nice balance that we're not a team where we're like forced hangouts. Like, we really don't hang out that much.
Yeah.
Because we do the jam and then we go to our show. Sometimes we get some dinnies, but like no presh. You know what I mean? Like,
you have a pretty high density of mispronouncing words when you talk, right?
I've been really good up to this point in the podcast.
You have been, but you reminded me.
Yeah.
Saying ease a lot is an Aubrey thing. Something ease.
Something ease.
And then the abbreviation with the sh sound happens a lot.
Yeah.
Presh.
No French.
You're talking into your Mikeys.
But doesn't it feel better when you say that? No. Okay.
I can appreciate it.
Well, the thing is, it's lasted a long time. I recently found, when I was in the guide service in college, I was the probationary chair where like you train new members, and I have a written thing where it's let's go to lunchy brunchies. So it's been with me a while.
Let's talk about the jam.
Yes, please.
So the jam, so the UCB East opened September last year, September, October last year, 2011. And one of Nate Dern, the then new artistic director, still relatively new, one of the things he wanted to do with UCB East, I don't think I'm speaking incorrectly here, was try to give students more of a chance to perform. Students and just sort of like people who had been around but maybe weren't on teams. And so like, you know, there's like open mics and the storytelling opportunities, and the jam was a big part of it. We used to have a monthly jam, but it would get canceled a lot for like special shows.
Right.
So to have the weekly jam, a reliable time every Wednesday, was like a big deal. You guys hosted it from the beginning, right? You have been hosting it since it started.
Yes.
And I think it's amazing.
Thanks.
I think it's super great. I think it's given... Sypha, you're a big mainstay of this jam, right?
I love
you go
the
all
jam.
The time.
He's great.
I love the jam.
So I'm going to say what my opinion is, and I want to hear what your opinion is, and Aubrey, I want to hear yours too.
Okay.
I feel like it's in a theater where we don't have a lot of performance opportunities, we have to say no a lot, like no, the classes are sold out, no, this show is sold out, no, we don't have enough this. The jam takes all comers.
Yes.
And seems to just have a great vibe. The audience is psyched.
Yeah.
When I go, and they stay the whole time. Like, you perform for not that long. Not everybody stays the whole time, but a lot of people stay for a lot of it to watch everybody. And I feel like there's regulars who go every week and they get to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like its own little subculture of people who love improv.
Yeah.
And the UCB is lucky to have this kind of hub for a community form around it. Your thoughts?
Me or Sypha? Who do you want
first?
You
first, Aubrey.
Okay. Well, thank you. I mean, We love, I mean, we all love hosting the jam. I love hosting the jam. That group, it's just phenomenal. And, you know, I think it really meant a lot to us. Like, we realized how much it meant to people when we, Grandma's Ashes got moved to the weekend. We were hosting the jam, and Clara Yoob and maybe Kurt came up on stage and gave us a big card that everyone had signed at the jam.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was like, congratulations.
Do you remember the cipher?
No. I didn't go to the jam until after you started on the weekend.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And like Claire Ayoub, who's just a dream, like said, you know, like, you all have meant so much to us, and thank you. We all love the jam. And we all just were in the green room afterwards, like, on the verge of tears, like, reading this card. And I remember Ryan had to miss it, and I took a picture and emailed it to him. And I think his email was just like, oh my God, like, or something. We were all just so blown away, like,
yeah,
by how much love there was.
Do you guys have any strategy for running the jam well? I feel like it's one of the best run jams. I've seen a lot of jams over the years.
I mean, our big thing is that we really want it to be a supportive environment. And if you're going to come on stage and be a bully or a wienersaurus, like, we're going to shut it down.
Right. The word you just used again?
A wienersaurus.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Don't worry, I've used it in class. I hope that's okay, Mr. School. So, like, when we are backstage in the green room in between sets, like, because sometimes we're just, like, resting our old bones, we're usually talking about, like, this feels good. This is a good show, or, yeah, you know, or I can't believe that kid just got on stage and edited out everybody. Like, that stuff really, I think, we are not in favor of, because
right,
that's not how we play and how we have found joy.
Yeah,
we found joy through backing each other up and supporting each other.
Yeah,
so, like, that's, we usually give our little speech at the top,
right?
And it's all about, like, don't be coming in. And I mean, I have, like, my thing, which is, if you're tagging somebody out and I can hear it, that's too loud.
Yeah,
which is, honestly, can we cut that out at UCB, because I'm so sick of really aggressive tag-ins.
Yeah.
Like a slam on the back.
Yeah.
I literally squeak anytime that happens. There's no way my body's not going to go like, ugh.
Yeah.
So be gentle, man.
Yeah.
So that's something. I've also started saying, if you say bitch or slut in a scene, I'm going to talk to you after the show.
That's good.
And like, don't, like, let's just love each other on stage is usually what we say.
Yeah.
So I think that environment and knowing, like, that's what we are going to encourage, I hope that's had an impact on the show.
I think it's had an impact on the school. I think people who go to the jam every week are generally better.
That's great.
And they're happier, I think. Like, they
good.
Feel this. I'm sure this isn't true for everybody. I'm sure there's tons of exceptions to it.
Right.
But anecdotally, I do see a noticeably large group of students who seem to feel connected to the community because they go to the jam.
That's great.
And they chill out a little bit.
Good.
Like, they don't feel like they have to prove it in every scene in class. Claire was in my 401. It was really good. And and I've seen Kurt in a bunch of workshops, and Sarah Feinstein was one of their kind of group who did a lot of stuff. And they would kind of have the confidence that usually you had to be in an indie group for like a year and a half to get. But I think it's because they feel included.
Yeah.
They feel like, oh, we know other people who were doing this, and I am connected to a larger thing, so I'm relaxed somehow.
Yeah. And I think the vibe, too, I mean, plug for my jams again.
Yeah.
But these are, I do pick dancey songs. We like to dance in between sets.
Yeah.
We love doing it. We're having fun up there. And our goal as being, because two of us are always going to be in a set, our goal is to get everybody out and to also stop bad behavior. So if someone's being a wienersaurus, we're going to tag you out and like try to like wrap that up.
Yeah.
So we're not up there to be like, we want to show off. And like, like, our goal is to make sure people have a good experience.
Good,
so
it's a great teaching tool. It feels natural. Like, you're talking about like playing your jams.
Mm-hmm.
In between scenes, but they don't. It doesn't feel. You know, you're talking about like how you guys don't necessarily go out to Denny's.
Yes. God, I'm loving this.
That you guys are supportive of each other.
Yeah.
So I think like teams have to find their own ways of being cool. Like some teams have been go out and hang out together a lot, and some teams don't ever do that. And it's either way can work fine.
Yeah.
And I feel like some teams are like, we got to have a crazy opening and like a big, you know, like the bells and whistles are part of our identity, and that's cool. And some teams, it's not true.
Yeah.
And it's you guys, it seems like you have found like your sort of voice in terms of presenting yourselves in a way that feels true to grandmas. I think people can pick up, and that's like, oh yeah, this is like a real original group voice that sets a room at ease. Whereas if another group came in there and tried to act like grandma's ashes, you'd feel it was false. Mm. You got to be yourself as a group, I think.
Thanks.
I'm going to ask Cyphus some questions. Yeah. I want to know how you started going to the gym and what you feel about the gym.
I made a mistake because I did go to the gym before they had a weekend team, before you were a weekend team, because I remember how excited I was that they became a weekend team. But I mean, I went, I think, maybe the first or second one when it first opened, because it was pretty much there when UCB East opened, right?
Yeah, I think the second week.
So I went early on. And I try to go almost every week.
So you get to work early, right?
Yeah,
you work early. So like this is Wednesday night. You have to be what time at work on Thursday?
I've fallen asleep at the gym before.
Oh, Saiba.
If I'm too tired, I always sit in the back because I'm going to nod out.
You're so sweet.
Yeah. So, but Mike, and I'm not trying to talk you out of it, but why are you going? Like, how did it be that you went?
The gym has helped me immensely. At first, I was super scared.
Okay.
I wouldn't come out. I did a lot of things that I didn't like that were wrong. And I could feel myself getting better there because, one, you go out and, like, grandma's ashes, like, will help you. Like, it's like if you break your ankle, they will carry you through the scene.
Yeah.
And that makes you feel so good. And it helps you get better because you're like, oh, I could just do that.
Right.
You know, because usually
you see examples of support.
Yeah, when you rehearse, you're rehearsing with a lot of people in your class or on your level, so you don't have that that person that knows how to do it, quote unquote, and fixes it instantly.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get in a rut and the coach really doesn't really jump into a scene.
Yeah.
You know? We're at the gym. You're riding along, and Ryan will jump in, Lydia, Aubra, and it's like, and they make you feel so good, like you get high off of it.
Yeah, it's a real contagious environment, like to watch, and also like a lot of vets play at it. I feel like Neil Casey would go a lot, under his alter ego Roscoe Conklin,
the best.
And then just like other people, whoever be around that night might stick around and and do it, perform.
Yeah, like Neil's presence is huge.
Yeah,
because Neil also. Sometimes, like, Neil's name gets drawn last, and Neil will stay till the very end of the jam. Yeah. And he'll hang out afterwards.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine, like, because I look at Neil and I'm like, you're a super genius.
So to students, he's, like, made of light.
Yeah, and to get to go and perform with him, I'm like, God, he's the best to just stick around. And he laughs the entire time, and you hear that beautiful Neil Casey laugh. And it's just like I'm so appreciative of how great he is about that. And then Sean, his brother, will be there too. And I just like theme them together on a brotherly level. And wonderful people like have come to the jam and stay. And that makes a big difference, you know, to have people like that.
The jam, there's been jams at the UCB for years, but this is the only one that I think that everybody knows about and everyone is like, kind of has it on their radar.
Yeah, I thought all jams were like this.
Yeah.
And then I've been to other jams, and I'm like, ooh, what's going on here?
It's also probably the crowd. Like, when
for
I came
sure.
in the third or fourth week, and it's like packed with people, that makes a huge difference. Because the old jams, sometimes it would be like that, but sometimes you'd have like a pretty sparse, disinterested crowd. I don't know what it is, but like,
the only problem, the only downfall, not downfall, bad part about it was the sets used to be a little longer.
Oh, yeah.
But then it got so crowded, they had to cut it. It used to be like 10 minutes, right?
It was 10 minutes for like a month.
So now we're like at 8. Yeah. So we have to, but sometimes we're averaging like 72 names.
Yeah.
I know.
So it's just a matter of like, and we've got, you know, Mr. Captain Phil being like, you better get this show wrapped up.
Phil, the manager.
But he's a captain. He's a captain. Let's give him a captain.
Respect.
Toot, toot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so we're there every week. So I think all of us are going in debt for cabs because we're usually there till like 1 a.m.
doing. Yeah.
But we love it. Like we love it. It means so much when we have people come up afterwards after the jam and say how much fun they had or like.
Well, I think you've created a couple generations of students who will like be able to run it someday also. Like
yeah.
They'll remember, no, this is the way the jam is supposed to be. We remember how it was.
Gentle taps.
That's correct. Gentle taps, supportive environment, no wienersauruses.
No wienersauruses.
It's hard. Like you can't force, I mean, and a community, you can't always force things to happen the way you want to. That has to kind of come together organically. Like a combination of somebody's individual decisions and just the right time for something to happen.
Yeah.
And this was a good, happy marriage of like good people and the right space and students who wanted to do it. Like it's a really great thing.
Totally.
It's the birth of like what's going to become a regular part of the UCB experience, and it just wasn't there before last summer.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's going to be as big as, like, ASCAT, or, I mean, as far as taking classes here. You go see ASCAT, like,
absolutely.
You get into Harold Knight, you go to the jam.
Oh, man.
I think that's going to be, like, regular. Maybe not all the time. You can't always make it. You're not going to be one of these people who goes every week, but, like, you, just like some people don't go to ASCAT that often, but you know of it. You remember when you went to it. You have memories of your first time doing it and stuff like that.
I think I hate missing the jam.
Oh. You're insane, though. You have an insane level of devotion. Like I'm sure a lot of your peers and loved ones have been like, what are you doing?
I've paid gigs. And like, you have to be there by 11. I'm like, can you push it to 12:30? And my manager's like, why? I'm like, I have to go to the gym.
You are the best.
It is insane. It is so cool. It would be the equivalent of like Matt Besser being like, I can't make it to ASCAT. I have to go do like a hip hop radio shit at midnight, like in Soho for like half an hour. Can you push ASCAT for like a little bit? It is like that.
No.
I think we got to wrap up, Aubrey. I think we're reaching the end of our time here.
Oh, boy.
Do we have anything else you want to plug or talk about? Or
no, just Make Yourself Comfy podcast.
Okay,
subscribe to it.
Yeah, it's a great podcast.
I'm just saying, like, you were on it. I mean, mega wonderful people. And
every week you have great people. Neil Casey that we've talked about was on it.
I mean, just everybody on that show. And the thing is, Taylor Moore is the editor, and he is a genius. And his sound effects and everything are so unreal. And I just think everyone needs to hear his talent, too.
Make Yourself Comfy podcast and come see Grandma's Ashes Saturday nights, 10:30 at UCB Chelsea. Jam Wednesday nights at 11. And then every other week, What I
Did for Love.
What is that?
7:30 on Fridays.
7:30 Friday, UCB East. So, Arba, thank you so much for
thank you for having me. This was so nice.
You're very nice. Saifa, thank you for being on the mic for this.
Saifa.
Podcast intern.
Appreciate it.
Excellent work.
Peapod Ian,
good job. And so come back next week. We'll have another episode, and I expect my co-host, John Frusciante, and his bassy voice will be back to balance out the bottom range of this podcast. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Vows are spoken to be broken. Feelings are tense. Words are trivial. Pleasures remain, so does the pain. Words are meaningless and forgettable.